As we dig deeper today into this series called To Cross Over, looking at Abram, who finally today gets a new name. We've been looking at Abram's life and his decisions and his interactions with God, and we're asking, what can we learn? And today, the title of the sermon is Covenant Keeper, because up until this point in the story, God has been the sole keeper of the covenant. Really, all of the discussion about covenant has centered around God alone. Abram's only role has been to believe, which he did and was credited righteousness, and to watch, observe as God walked through the pieces in that vision that he was given to enhance the promises and faithfulness of the covenant. But today, at the very beginning of chapter 17, we're going to see an invitation from God for Abram to be a participant in this covenant. So it's a little strange, but I'm going to actually preach from chapter 17 the next three Sundays, today and in the next 2 weeks. I'm not going to preach on the entire chapter all three Sundays because that would be impossible and repetitive. But this morning, I'm going to preach on the first couple verses, and then we're going to get to other stuff in the next two Sundays. But I want to read the entire chapter because I think we need to make sense of each piece in the scope of the whole chapter itself. So if you want to follow along in your Bible, I'll be reading from Genesis chapter 17, starting at the very beginning. And if you don't have a Bible with you, you're welcome to follow along on the screen behind me. The words will be up there. Starting in verse 1, Genesis chapter 17. When Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to him and said, I am God Almighty. Walk before me faithfully and be blameless. And then I will make my covenant between me and you and will greatly increase your numbers. Abram fell face down and God said to him, as for me, this is my covenant with you. You will be the father of many nations. No longer will you be called Abram. Your name will be Abraham. For I have made you a father of many nations. I will make you very fruitful. I will make nations of you, and kings will come from you. I will establish my covenant as an everlasting covenant between me and you and your descendants after you for the generations to come, to be your God and the God of your descendants after you. The whole land of Canaan where you now reside as a foreigner, I will give you as an everlasting possession to you and to your descendants after you, and I will be their God. And then God said to Abraham, as for you, you must keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you for the generations to come. This is my covenant with you and your descendants after you, the covenant you are to keep. Every male among you shall be circumcised. You are to undergo circumcision, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and you. For generations to come, every male among you who is 8 days old must be circumcised, including those born in your household or bought with money from a foreigner, those who are not your offspring. Whether born in your household or bought with your money, they must be circumcised. My covenant in your flesh is to be an everlasting covenant. Any uncircumcised male who has not been circumcised in the flesh will be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant. God also said to Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, you are no longer to call her Sarai, but her name will be Sarah. I will bless her and surely give you a son by her, and I will bless her so that she will be the mother of nations. Kings of peoples will come from her. Abram fell face down, and he laughed and said to himself, will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? And Abram said to God, if only Ishmael might live under your blessing. Then God said, yes, but your wife Sarah will bear you a son, and you will call him Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. As for Ishmael, I've heard you. I will bless him. I will make him fruitful and increase his numbers, and he will be the father of 12 rulers, and I will make him into a great nation, but my covenant will be with Isaac, whom Sarah will bear to you by this time next year. Abraham finally has a deadline. He had to be dancing by that point. When he had finished speaking with Abraham, God went up from him. And on that very day, Abraham took his son Ishmael and all of those born into his household or bought with his money, every male in his household, and he circumcised them as God had told him. Abraham was 99 years old when he was circumcised, and his son Ishmael was 13. Abraham and his son Ishmael were both circumcised on that very day, and every male in Abraham's household, including those born in his household or bought from a foreigner, was circumcised with him. So we're going to talk a lot about a lot of stuff in the next 3 weeks. We're going to get to the changing of the names and how deep that meaning is, that it changes trajectory and destiny because of God's blessing in their lives. We're going to talk about how Abraham dared to laugh at God, and yet God continued to speak with him. And we're going to talk about the covenant of circumcision and how important it was for the people for such a long time, and then how in the New Testament it gets a significant readjustment. So we're going to get to all of that. But today, just the first two verses, I want to talk about how when Abram is invited into this covenant, yes, it's by circumcision, but before they even get to that, God simply says, "Walk before me faithfully and blamelessly." If you want to enter into this covenant, you need to enter in and walk before me faithfully and blamelessly. It's an invitation to participation. See, up until now, all the covenant discussion in Abram's story has been centered on what God has done or what God is doing or what God will do in the future, right? God has chosen Abram, part of the covenant. God is leading Abram, providing for Abram, part of the covenant. God will give Abram descendants and land, part of the covenant. I mean, Abram has only been asked to believe, which he did, and to sit there entranced as God walked between the pieces for the both of them. This is God's covenant, make no mistake. It's even highlighted here in chapter 17. Did you see how many times that phrase, "my covenant," is in there? God is declaring clearly, "This is my covenant with you," at least a half dozen times. But in the midst of all of it, now Abram is being invited into the role of an active participant into the covenant. Now, I want to make it clear, this does not change God's role as the only liable party. God is still the one who has said, "I'll walk between the pieces for both of us. If I don't uphold the covenant, I'll be torn apart. And if you don't uphold the covenant, I will be torn apart." And we talked about how that was seen ultimately in Jesus on the cross, where God was torn apart because we don't keep our end of the covenant. So God is still the sole liable party, but Abram is invited in to participate. To genuinely participate without becoming liable. To add to the experience without gaining risk, right? Put it this way. This is a really simple and basic way to think about it, but it's the best I could do with my limited brain. So this past week, Andy and Mike and I went to pastor's conference, and we drove down. We had to rent a vehicle because we had to bring a bunch of sound equipment down. I did not get on the paperwork as a driver for the vehicle because I'd be riding home with my family. It wouldn't make sense to add me extra expense, blah, blah, blah. So on the way down, I was simply the co-pilot. I was in the front seat and they would take turns driving. So I was not a part of the covenant agreement to travel with that vehicle. I could not legally drive that vehicle on the way down, right? I was not part of the covenant. However, I was an active participant in the journey. I was there to add to the experience, as it were, right? I was trying to think of what I was adding, and I was thinking it was probably my amazing co-piloting skills, except for the fact that this was a pretty swanky rental vehicle because we got a free upgrade and it had a built-in nav right there in the dash, so the extent of my navigating was pointing at that screen so they could follow that. So I was left assuming that it was either my rugged good looks that was contributing to the travel, or it was my on-target humor as I watched other drivers and tried to make jokes about everything that was happening around us, because that's really all I had to offer to the situation. I was a participant. I was there with them, but I did not take on any risk at all. They were the ones that were taking the risk, but I was there. And it's a loose analogy, but I think it's a good picture to say Abram's being invited in to participate in this covenant. He's not having to risk like God is risking, but he's participating in the covenant itself. And I want to remind all of us today that as children of Abraham and as followers of Jesus, we are also invited into this participatory role in God's covenant. All of us, we're invited in. Now, I want to be very clear. You are not invited into the covenant to help hold the covenant up. You are not invited to help earn your salvation or establish your right to anything. God has done all of that. He simply invites you to take hold of it. But you are still invited in to be a participant in this covenant because, friends, you are the covenant people of God. That covenant people is no longer established by any sort of ethnic identity. It's established by the person of Jesus Christ and the presence of the Holy Spirit. You are the covenant community, and you're invited into this role of participating in the covenant. And the way God frames it for Abram is walking together. That's how this idea of advancing into the covenant is framed. And for a guy like Abram, who spent a lot of his years wandering around as a nomad in the desert, he understands the idea of walking. I like the framework of walking because I think at bare minimum, it assumes at least two things, movement and intimacy. To say walk before me or walk with me assumes at least movement and intimacy. I think sometimes we get nervous about our faith being something we see as active and walking because I think we sometimes fear, what if I walk away? What if I wander away? And it looks like God is willing to take that chance. He wants our faith to be active, to be in motion, to be moving. It's an invitation to walk. And it's not just here. Think about Jesus' life. When he first started to call out to those earliest disciples, what two-word phrase did he use? Follow me. You can't follow someone unless you are walking with them. Or think about one of my personal favorite scenes for the resurrected Jesus is on that road to Emmaus, where he literally walked with his followers for miles, somehow disguising who he was. Or I think it may be the disciples were not real bright, maybe they just didn't figure it out. But for miles, he simply walked with them and shared with them and had them tell the story about what had been happening. Walking together. I mean, it doesn't stop there. Paul in Galatians chapter 5 encourages all of us to walk in the Spirit. This faith has motion and activity embedded into it. Just think about the practical idea of taking a walk with someone and what it means. Because if you take a walk with someone, it typically means that you are sharing more than just steps. More than just the physical steps of a walk, you share your worries, your fears, your concerns, your joys, your embarrassments. You share your heart and your life with someone as you walk together. Man, I imagine most of you, if you take a walk with someone, unless you agree to it beforehand, you don't walk in complete silence and don't speak to one another. Maybe you do, I don't know. Normally, when you walk with someone, it's an invitation to be intimately involved in their life, to ask questions, to tell stories. I was reminded of this during the past week. We were on the beach late in the trip. I was finally feeling well. I actually got strep while I was down there on the beach. What a terrible place to get strep and be huddled up in a hotel room is on at Outer Banks, Kitty Hawk. But anyway, I finally felt well enough to at least sit on the beach, and I sat long enough, I thought, I'm ready to try and move a bit, so I just wanted to walk down the beach, and I got about 50 or 75 feet away, and I heard this thunk, thunk, thunk in the sand of these feet coming after me, and sure enough, it's my daughter, and so she just wanted to walk with Dad. That's all she really wanted to do. Did we walk in silence? Of course not. She's concerned about me. How are you feeling, Daddy? I see you're moving now. That's good, right? Are you feeling okay? We talked about school, like how's school going? Are you excited to get home from the beach and go back to school? Of which she was zero excited to go back to school from the beach. She would rather just stay at the beach instead of going back to school. But when you walk with someone, it's movement, but it's also intimacy. That's why I find it interesting that God says to Abram, walk before me. Movement, intimacy. And the way it's phrased in the original language suggests that God is saying to Abram, you are always walking before me in my presence. Not just in these moments of divine revelation. Because I wonder if it was tempting for Abram to think, when God shows up and is manifest to me or I can hear him, then I know he can see me. But when that's not happening, he probably can't see me, and I can kind of sort of do whatever I think is right in the moment. And we can laugh and shrug it off, but I think many of us, at least me, were raised to kind of think along the same lines. Now, be honest, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but how many of you were brought up to think, whether explicitly or implicitly, that when you walk into a church building, God kind of sees you more than he does when you're outside of the church building? Like, you need to take your level of behavior and morality up several notches when you're in God's house, because somehow the cloud that is over your life every other day in every other place kind of parts, and God looks and goes, oh, now I can see what you're doing. You really need to behave yourself. I think we passed that idea along. How silly is that? There is no meeting place that is so special that God sees you better than anywhere else. So Abram's being told by God, walk before me at all times and all places. Oh, and by the way, when you do so, when you're walking under the gaze of God, I want you to do it in two ways: faithfully and blamelessly. No pressure, right? God is always watching, and make sure as you walk before him, you do so faithfully and blamelessly. Wow, that is a tall, tall order. But let's dig down into those two words for just a moment. Faithfully. To be faithful is connected to the ideas of being consistent and being loyal. Now, it means a whole lot of things, but for this purpose, being consistent and being loyal. That's why we have this geyser in Yellowstone that's actually called Old Faithful, right? Because we know, we can time it goes off every so often. I've never seen it. I've heard it's gorgeous. Someday I'm going to get there and see it. We call it Old Faithful because it's consistent. It's reliable, right? Or think about a family dog. We'll call them faithful pets, right? We don't call cats faithful pets most of the time. We call them crazy for the most part. I love my cat, but anyway, that's a whole other story. But we call dogs for the most part faithful, right? And it's because good dogs, anyway, no matter how far they might wander in the neighborhood, no matter how much they might enjoy the company of other people around or want to chase things down, whether it's squirrel or mailman or whatever it might be, they always come back loyally to their home or to their master, to their family. They always come back to sit at the feet, or for some of you, on the sofa with, for some of you, in bed with. But they always come back, and they're welcomed, and they're loyal. To be faithful includes being loyal, includes being consistent. And that's what Abram's being called to, loyalty and consistency. But then the blameless one, that's a little harder, isn't it? Because we look at the word blameless, and we think, God expects me to be perfect. And I want to calm that fear right off the bat. That is not the correct reading of what it means to be blameless, to be morally perfect. That's not the idea here. The Hebrew word actually means to be without blemish or without defect. We find it a few other places in the Old Testament, including two that I think are especially appropriate. The first one is in Leviticus chapter 1. We're talking about the quality of animals for ritual offerings. And several times it says that those animals that are offered to God, which we are offered to God, have to be without blemish. In other words, there has to be a purity about them to be sacrificed. The other place we find that word that I think is applicable is in Job chapter 1. When the text talks about the person Job, it says twice that Job was considered blameless and upright. Now, do we believe for a second that means that Job was morally perfect, that he never made one single error or mistake in his judgment? No, we would never say that. So what does it mean to be blameless, to walk blamelessly? I would say that the standard is pure devotion and not moral perfection regarding rules. The standard is pure devotion to God and not moral perfection. Or maybe I would put it this way. As we walk before the Lord, he requires of us not absolute perfection, but a consistent and loyal recognition of him as our King, and a pure and undiluted offering of ourselves as his servants. If I was to summarize what Abram is hearing from God, I would say it like that. Walk before the Lord, and as you do so, it's not about being absolutely perfect from a moral standpoint. It's about consistently and loyally recognizing God as my king and then offering myself purely and undiluted as his servant. I chose that word undiluted because at least I know when I look at my life, my devotion to God tends to get diluted by other things that I want to get devoted to. Some of these are easy to see because they're evil and wrong, and we label them as sin. But I'll be really honest, a lot of times in my life, I look at good things that tend to dilute my devotion to God. If we want to walk faithfully and blamelessly, we need to walk in ways that are loyal, that are consistent, while not perfect, and try and give ourselves fully and purely over to God. So a couple ways to think about this passage during this moment of reflection as we close and during the week. Here's the first one. How would you describe your walk with God in the past 3 months? Just try and think that far back. In the past 3 months, how would you describe your walk with the Lord? A second-natured, joyful stroll? Or would you say your walk maybe is more rare and stumbling? Would you say that it's awkward, but growing consistently? Or maybe you would say, my walk has been completely non-existent over the last 3 months. And then secondly, as you consider your entire life happening under the gaze of God, would you describe it as faithful and blameless? Faith, just like we've been talking about, faithful and blameless. And if not, maybe ask yourself today, what things need to change? What needs to be rearranged? What needs to be set aside? What needs to be brought in order to walk more faithfully, consistently, loyally, in order to walk more blamelessly, more purely devoted to God? So take a moment or two to pray, to read through those words and allow the Spirit to speak to you, and then I'm going to close this with prayer in just another moment.